So today, as we get started, this was one of the parables that I really considered skipping. And this parable is used in a lot of cases to as ministers would give a sermon on tithing, on giving. And this is one of the parables that's used for that. This is not a Sunday school lesson on tithing, even though I am the treasurer. We're not going to do a Sunday school lesson on tithing. But we are going to talk about what Jesus is telling his disciples here. And he's talking to the disciples in this. And, you know, as we wrapped up 14, we had went over the parables of the lost coin, the prodigal son, the field and the pearl and all this. And that is kind of is sandwiched in between the parables that we were doing on the glory of heaven and what the worth and the cost of discipleship that we talked about last week. And so this week, as we get into this, is kind of Jesus is again, of course, teaching. He's teaching to the disciples, but interesting enough, as we see in some of the text, the Pharisees are literally sitting behind them listening to what's going on. And they have a little bit of comment towards that in the back. So I want to go ahead and I want to read this this passage. And we're going to read a good bit that's part of it and then some of it that's not part of it. But I want to get you, I want to paint the whole picture for you. Okay. So this is Luke 16, verse 1. And he also said to the disciples, so he also is a lead in that finishes up what he was teaching prior to that to the Pharisees. There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and steward being somebody that managed his business or a manager. And I mean, the parable is listed in some translations as the shrewd manager and New King James Version listed as the unjust steward. Okay. So there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and he, an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward." So the guy was dipping in the till, so to speak, and he got caught. He got caught. So the rich man brings him in, and he tells him, "Hey, I've caught you. You know, confess up. Tell me what it's all about right here." Verse 3, then the steward said within himself, talking to himself, "What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses." Now, to me, it's written a little bit, we got to figure out who they are. So this is a key part on who they are. Verse 5. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him, and he said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, "Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, "How much do you owe?" So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, "Take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourself by unrighteous mammon." Does anybody's translation have anything other than mammon? M-A-M-M-O-N?
Mine says unrighteous wealth. I have not used it. It says, "I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwelling."
Okay, so you get the picture of this. What this is, mammon is actually, we'll get into that a little bit later. So I'll hold off on that. "And I say to you, make your friends yourself by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you've not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust to true riches? And if you've not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and a mammon. So, we read a lot just then. And if you go into the concordances of the commentaries, there's as much diversity in this parable as there probably is in all the other parables put together. And there's a lot of very divided thoughts on why Jesus would commend somebody who steals. Because that's what a lot of people read this as. I'll be honest with you, when I first read this and thought, I thought, boy, that's going to be just a wicked something to teach on in a Sunday school class, because there is so much in this parable. But I want to simplify it down, and we're going to talk a little bit about, and I know this is a shocker, about some of the Greek words that's in here. And we're going to look at what I believe, and a lot of commentators believe, is what Jesus is teaching here. And it's not totally about tithing or what you give, but it's about what you give. So let's get on that. A farmer discovered that his favorite cow had given birth to twin calves. He said to his wife, "You know, dear, I think we ought to give one of these calves to the Lord. We will raise one for ourselves and give one to the Lord who has given us this unexpected blessing," she said. "Which one are you going to give to the Lord?" "Well," he said, "I haven't decided. We'll treat them alike, feed them the same. When it comes time to market them, we'll decide which one we give to the Lord." So he fed the calves and took care of them. They grew throughout the summer. And one day he came to the house looking miserable. And his wife said, "What's the matter, honey?" He said, "Oh, a terrible thing's happened. The Lord's calf died." She said, "But I thought you hadn't chosen which one it was yet." He said, "Oh, yes," he said, "I did. All the time I was thinking that the white calf would be the Lord. And when it was time that calf died, I was sure it was." So we don't give all the time to God what we should give, right? Even though we give a lot, and we give sometimes more or different than what a lot of people think giving is. And we talked last week about what the difference was between cost and worth, right? Remember talking about that? What it was, what it meant for something was what it was worth versus what it cost. So as we get into this today, would you agree that there's multiple ways to give to forward the kingdom of God? Oh, absolutely. It's not necessarily money.
But you're supposed to give of your first fruit.
You are. So what's your first fruit? Is your first fruit time or is it money? If you don't have time, but you have money.
Yeah, but do you not have time because you have money?
It's a good question. It's a very good question. So then, what are you worshiping, if that's your situation? All right. So let's go a little further. All right. So when you look at this, as in all the parables that we look at, Jesus always has central characters in this parable. And when you first look at this parable, who's the first person you think of as the central character? The rich man? Or the manager? Right? Is that who Jesus is got as the central character to it? Feels like a literature class in high school, doesn't it? Trying to figure out what he's doing. So I want you to think back on this parable to two distinctions that Jesus made. Now granted, the manager plays a big role and the rich man plays a big role. But I want you to look at what's mentioned a little bit later, okay? So Jesus talks about the sons of light. So we know from all the other teachings that light's associated with Jesus or with God, with heaven, and the darkness is always associated with the devil. So the sons of light would be us, right? So Jesus is like almost doing this in against two groups, one group being the sons of light, right? So a lot of people would look at this parable with money, and that's interesting. But here's just a little bit of tidbit of information. One out of three parables will have something to do with money. Did you know that? 30% of the parables talk about money. Didn't realize. Some person wrote down one time, said, if you live 80 years, you'll spend 50 of those thinking about the money one way or the other. A lot of truth in that, all right? But you know, we all know God understands money. And we all know that, obviously, you know, God being who God is, understands that you don't get through life here on earth. You got to have some type of money from somewhere, whether you get it from the government or whether you get it by earning it. You got to have money some way to survive. You just can't survive without money. And I don't know, some people says that begging pays pretty good now in some situations, but I don't know about that. All right. So if you look at again this parable, you see where this rich man, and if you do some research into the measures of oil and the measures of wheat, these are massive amounts of product that Jesus is talking about. You're talking about measures of oil. In today's world, you're talking about like tank farms and tractor trailers, hundreds and hundreds of tractor trailers of oil. And the oil they're talking about, of course, is olive oil. And then you talk about the wheat and the measures of 100 measures of wheat is like barns upon barns upon barns and barns and barns of wheat. So this is the picture that Jesus is painting here to the disciples, which they would have been well understood about, is this man is an extremely rich man, extremely, extremely rich. And it kind of plays back when he finds it interesting that the way that the shrewd manager really does him in the second time after he's been caught with his hand in the till the first time. So he's already been embezzling money in some way, somehow. And he does it again without taking money, but he does it to try to provide because he doesn't want to, quote, work for his future, right? All right. So let's look at a few things as we unpack this and talk about the different things in it. So one thing I want to get back to just a minute. So when you look at the word mammon, that word mammon, in a lot of the cases, the Greek word is used to describe Satan. And it could be a very rich man. It could be somebody who goes after rich things. And that's been associated as a verb to describe the way Satan goes after the people on earth. So the word mammon is usually used to describe a very rich person, a person who has a lot, or a person who really has a lot and goes after more. Yeah, already just bountifully rich, but wants more. And you always think back. And when I read Revelations where it talks about Satan being cast out of heaven, you know, what was it that made you think to do what you did to get kicked out of heaven? It'd be pretty bad, you know what? That's bad. That's pretty bad. All right. So let's get back to the story real quick. So a good example of a crook, Luke, this story is talking about, you know, an employee who pretty much cooked the books. As we talked about, his dishonest methods. He talked about the way that he told with his actions. A little bit more about parables. 38 of the parables that Jesus told, 19 of them dealt with dealing with people's possessions. All right. An interesting point. Baptism is talked about in the Bible. There are 16 times more verses in the New Testament on handling money than devoted to baptism, Lord's Supper. There are 32 times more biblical statements about Christian financial management than it talks about the Lord's Supper. Interesting. So the Bible talks a lot about the way that we manage our wealth. And who in here is always or used the term before, talks about money as the root of all evil?
You know, love of money.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Hold that thought. We're going to come back to that. All right. So the moral of the story is found actually in the last sentence to understand this. The manager was cunning, conniving, dishonest, rascal, but you can't help but smile about how shrewd he was. So here's this guy that says, I'm caught. I'm losing my job. But as a last ditch effort, I'm going to take these people who owe my master a whole bunch of money, and I'm going to let them cheat him through me to where I get them to the point to where they'll do favors for me, because I need somewhere to live. I need somewhere to get money from. I'm too old to work. I can't work. I'm too proud to go beg. So I've got to do something to set up my future. So I'm going to do this last dishonest deed just to get these people on my side. All right. So you ever heard expressions, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, a tit for tat. Hey, you owe me one. So a lot of people, when they look at this, think that Jesus is approving a dishonest person. And we all know that's not true, right? I mean, we know Jesus wouldn't do that. But now here comes the play on people in this parable. And this is some of the things that people miss when they read this, because they get all caught up in the shrewd manager, you know, doing what he does. And then Jesus, you know, essentially in a parable compliments him for it. Right. One guy wrote this. He said, the world is temporary and the other world is eternal. The world is physical. The other world is spiritual. Millions of people live their lives as if this world was all they're ever going to be. They devote their entire lives to getting ahead in this world and accumulating all the toys that will make them feel comfortable. On the other hand, those of us who are people of light have a personal relationship with God. The Bible says God is light and in him there's no darkness, John 1:5. We're living in this world, but we know this world is not all there is. We'll never feel totally comfortable in this world because it's really not our home. Like Abraham, we're looking for a city that's not made with human hands. And he says, Jesus said we would learn to be a little shrewder in the ways of the world without becoming like the world. And it's almost like Jesus is saying, you know, like, come on, guys, children of the light, wake up. The reason we need a little dose of worldly wisdom is because we have to live and operate in this world. You know, have you ever met anybody that was so totally trusting that people really took advantage of them? You know, they're just as honest they can be. And you know, you want to just reach up and slap them and go, can you not pay attention to what's going on? Do you not see what people's doing to you?
I want to believe them. I mean, that's, you know, I want to.
Number one concern for aging adults right now is scams. Mm-hmm. Number one concern. And very rarely when somebody's convicted of scamming, do they ever get the money back to the people that they stole. Very, very rarely. There was an article in one of the magazines or somewhere I read, this has been a little while back, and it talked about what you what you need to do to help aging parents or aging family members as they get older to it. And you know, one of the things is that there's a lot of banks now that will restrict what somebody can remove from their account. So you can actually have their account like a ceiling put on it. Like you can only take $200 at a time or whatever that number is. But let's get back just a minute to about the sons of light and the sons of darkness. If you were to look at the things that shrewd people you know of, and we all know shrewd people, whether it's the business that we do or friends that we have or whatever it is, you all know shrewd people. And it's not always people that own businesses. It could just be people that are just shrewd. I mean, as a whole, I mean, there's shrewd people out there. Let's face it. When you look at the actions they take to get where they go, is there times you just kind of like just shake your head? Like, I can't believe you did that. I cannot believe you did that. The number one thing that if you look at people being shrewd people that they get called out on is what happens when the matriarch of a family passes away. You're talking about can divide up a family in a heartbeat. That will divide up a family in a heartbeat. And you see the shrewdness come out to people during these times. We've probably all seen that. We've all seen that. And the same thing is with business. And it's kind of being shrewd. Now then, if you take that shrewdness, are there times where in our walk with God, we need to be a little bit more shrewder than we are?
Shrewd is not a negative.
It is not.
It can be.
It can't be exactly right. It's just like the money we talked about a while ago. It's what you do with the money or what you do to get the money that can make it the root of the evil, not the money itself. There's a term, I can't remember what I wrote down. It's the money itself is like, what is that term? It has no ability to do anything. It's just there. And I mean, you can take a pile of money and pile it up right there on that table, and it's not going to do anything to anybody other than the people that want it. Where your heart's at. Is it a heart issue or is it an issue of the mind too? That a cunning issue, or that are they both connected?
It's fear. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like they say, you miss heaven by what, 16 inches?
Yeah.
So, and they're connected, but they're totally separate.
Yeah. Can't get here and here connected up together.
Well, it's like what Ann said about fear. So many people, money is security.
Right.
And so yes. What you're looking for is security. Now, some people can carry it far, you know, way too far, and then it does become the love of money. But you can get very wrapped up in the fear and wanting security that's your end goal. And frankly, I can understand it. And especially if, like, you're a parent, you have children. Mm-hmm. You know, you have people who are dependent on you. So it can end up a negative, but there's good rationale behind it. So it's where you draw the balance.
Have you ever heard the analogy where it talks about, and I may not quote this correctly, if you woke up in a house this morning, you're better off than 75% of the people in the world. If you have a car, you're better off than 85% of the world. If you have indoor plumbing, you're better off than 90% of the world. You know, there's a whole thing that goes on and on and on and on. And there's a part of all of us that looks at that and goes, wow. But it doesn't always... And I'm not sure, I'm not saying that it should always guide our actions for everything that we do from that. Because I don't think there's anything wrong, I personally don't, with having a job, working hard for a job, working hard to do well, accumulating wealth as in a process of having a job and doing the things that you do very well. I don't think there's a sin to that.
That's what you're talking about.
Well, it's kind of like the way we're programmed almost, you know, you do that. But
aren't we supposed to kind of plan for the future?
Well, absolutely. But yeah. And there's a two-sided coin to that too. You know, there's two future.
You know, you can die the rich millionaire with absolutely no one in your life.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You can hold on to that money fear that you had to pay people to take care of
it. Absolutely, you can. You can do that. You can do that. So as we dig in this a little more, I want to kind of lead you off in a little bit of direction right here. So let's look at something here. Money lessons from Jesus. Jesus used this parable about the crooked man to go into four practical principles about handling money. All right. We know these teachings about money because of the reaction of the Pharisees. Now look down to verse 14. All right. So this is actually gets into another one. And I did include this right here, but verse 14. Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things and they derided him. I think I've got another translation right here. The Pharisees loved money and heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. Sneering. Now, have you ever had somebody to start talking about something else and you know you're guilty or you know it's something about you? I'm not going to go in and ask you to tell stories, but if you ever had that to happen, and the natural reaction is, if you're guilty of that, to probably say something to support what you're doing like that. So that's what the Pharisees were doing. The Pharisees were, it's what really upset the Pharisees with Jesus' presence. He was upsetting their gravy train. I mean, they had it made. They had all the money they wanted to spend. They had all the power outside of Rome, but they had all the power to do what they wanted to do in their little world. And Jesus was messing that up. And they were losing their control over their people. And that was what prompted a lot of what happened to them. All right. One guy wrote, he said, "You may hear some Christians teach that money is evil." Back to what Ron was saying. I disagree. Money is not immoral, it's amoral. That's the word I was looking for, amoral. Morally neutral. It's what you do with the money that determines its moral value. Money can be used to build a facility like the building we're in, feed the hungry, educate people, take the gospel around the world, or it can be used to buy drugs, create pornography, or pay someone to kill somebody else. And there's a wide use of the money.
Don't you think that it's also how you get that money?
Exactly.
I mean,
a la the shrewd manager, right? The Bible never says it's evil. It's evil. It's the love of money, the craving of money, that's a problem. 1 Timothy 6:9-10 says this: "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and snare and many foolish and harmless desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing it have wandered away from the faith, pierced themselves with many griefs." We see that, right? I mean, every now and then, he said, even the Wall Street Journal gives some sound financial advice about money. A few years ago, they ran this statement. I was shocked at this. I didn't have time to look this up, but it says, money is the article which may be used as a universal passport to everywhere except heaven, as a universal provider of everything except happiness.
Wall Street Journal.
I know. I was shocked. I'm like,
yeah.
The guy wrote this. He said a few years ago, and I didn't have time. But let me read that again. He says, "Money is an article which may be used as a universal passport to everywhere except heaven, and as a universal provider of everything except happiness." Okay.
Did he keep his job?
Probably not. He's probably writing for Fox News now. So some more financial advice from Jesus. All right. "Your best investment is people that you'll see in heaven." Verse 9. "And I say to you, make friends for yourself by the unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into their everlasting home," which is a kind of a snarl, right? "He who is faithful in what he is in least and faithful in much, he is unjust and is unjust in least is unjust also in much," right? So he said, he goes on and said, the King James Version talks about mammon of the unrighteous. Mammon, he said, was the name of an ancient Canaanite god of riches. So that's where the word mammon comes from, all right? But notice how the crooked manager used his discounts to influence his customers so they receive him favorably. He said, obviously, the best way to do that is when you give your money to missionaries or evangelism, would they bring you into their home? It's the heavenly home we're talking about, not the earthly home. Jesus said, one day your money will be gone and you'll be gone from your money while you have the opportunity to use your money to influence people while you're living eternal dwellings here for your eternal dwellings in heaven. Number two, your management of God's money determines if he can trust you with true riches. So here's the thing. And you know, there's a lot of writings. Paul had one that you hear a lot: to he who much is given, much is expected. So you have a lot of those. So we're back just a minute about talking about what we talked at the beginning about giving. So if you're 85 years old and you're sitting at home and you don't have a lot of money, but once a week you're on a phone call to pray for people in this church or friends of people in this church, or people we know, is that giving? Absolutely. So do you put a price on that? No. No. Does God favor that? Is the same as you favor a rich man giving $1 million? I think so.
Well, I see it as you like I said a minute ago, the first fruit. Do you really place God number one? That's what it's all about.
So
God knows the heart.
Is it God you're placing first, or is it the people that you want to go to heaven with you, or not you, the not the individual people, but people as a whole? So to me, it's the chicken and the egg type thing. It's you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago in here talking about the actions of those who are children of God. So obviously we know you can't earn salvation. You're not gaining your spot in heaven for just your actions. And your actions are a result of your love for God that you want to do these actions. So it's a perpetual motion, right? Or should be. It's a, you know, it feeds in itself. So when you do this, the basis of it is, to me, is the love of God, right? We all agree about that. Now then, as Jesus is looking at this, he's comparing what people in the world, the shrewd people in the world, do to get ahead. So they think of these things, they act on these things, even though they're shrewd and dishonest. Just like the rich man said, hey, I got to give you a compliment. You stole money from me, but you're pretty smart on what you did to try to get ahead. You know, now fire you. So it's the compliment came from the rich man for taking the action to get what the guy did to get his future secured. Okay. Let's go a little bit further right here. The one guy wrote, and he says, your management of God's money determines of what you can be trusted with true riches. He said, first, there's worldly wealth. He said, that's the money God gives each one of us. You must remember that all wealth in the world belongs to God. He owns the diamonds, the gold, and all the oil wells. He owns the cattle, the hills. He owns the land. He is the one who causes us to prosper with this kind of wealth. God gives us wealth so we can buy basics that we need. We use money to buy food, clothing, shelter. Also, he gives us wealth so we can enjoy things that go beyond our basic necessities. This is a bonus. God has promised he will meet our needs, but he never promised to meet our wants. He said, when I speak of wealthy person, who do you envision? Bill Gates? George Soros? Do you think of yourself as wealthy? if you, and this is one of the guys quotes a while ago, he says, if you have money in your pocket to buy lunch and you have an indoor toilet, you drove your car to church, you're wealthier than 80% of the world's population. And it goes on, this goes on and on and on. And he says, look again at verse 11. Jesus speaks to another kind of wealth. He calls it true riches. If you're trustworthy with a little, God knows you can be trustworthy with a lot. If you choose to be trustworthy with worldly wealth, God can trust you with true riches. True riches have nothing to do with money. They're spiritual blessings like peace, security, and strength that are valuable. They can't be bought at any price. And he says, the first question is, are you returning a tithe to the Lord's? It belongs to the Lord. And he says, one guy wrote to him as a pastor. He says, Pastor, if I was making $1 million a year, I'd be happy to give the Lord 10% of it. He says, well, if you aren't tithing on the $30,000 that you are making, what makes you think God would trust you with $1 million? So money is a great servant, but it's a terrible master. Verse 13, Jesus shares a principle with us in verse 13. No servant can serve two masters. Either will hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. So again, it's that word mammon in that pagan god. Do y'all remember? People are too young for this. I can't be probably going. Who is Jack Benny? Y'all remember Jack Benny's things? You remember seeing the Jack Benny things? He really couldn't give up a dime. If you remember him, he really, really couldn't give up a dime. And he was they list him as a skin flint. I'd never heard that term, but it's somebody who hated to spend money. And in the old comedy routine, Jack Benny was accosted by a robber. Anybody see this one? I don't remember. He said, the mugger pointed the gun at Jack and says, come on, hand it over, your money or your life. And says, Jack was sitting there rubbing his hand. And the guy says, come on. He said, I'm thinking. So, there's people that won't give up money that has money, right? And there's people that that help in any way that they possibly can help. And I think there's lessons that can be learned as most. Last thing, money is temporary, but it's God's word that never expires to us. Verses 14 through 18. It says, and as the Pharisees was looking at him and they're sneering at what Jesus is talking about. And they says, now the Pharisees were lovers of money, all heard these things, and they derided him or sneered at him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourself before men, but God knows your hearts, for what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time, the kingdom of God has been preached and everyone is pressing into it. It is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one title of the law to fail. So, as we close out here, again, I didn't want this to be about tithing, and it's not about tithing, but I think a lot of it is the lesson Jesus is talking about on is one, we need to be a little bit shrewder sometimes than we are. We need to work harder and we talked last week about how easy it is as we talk to people and evangelize people that we don't give them the whole story about being followers of Jesus. We don't tell them the things that's required from them and the cost of what they need to give up to be truly followers of Jesus. So I think that has a lot to do with the fact that we look at monetary values on what we have. And again, I'm the treasurer. So, there's a balance at churches, and especially this one is no different, that you have the things and the programs and the people that we want here versus what it costs to have those. And that's obvious. And we all know that. But the more important thing is, in my opinion, is how you yourself give. And I'm not talking about money by no stretch of the imagination, because I think, the one guy wrote, and I didn't write it down, I was reading it. And he said, when you get to heaven, and you step foot in heaven, And the first person comes up to you and tells you, thank you for the time that you spent talking to me. That's the reason I'm here. That's worth more money than you could ever imagine. And it's worth more than, and we can't put a price on. And So as we close out today, you know, I want to encourage you as we get into this giving season, which is another reason I wanted to have this parable when it come through. You know, it's not always about the money, and it's not always about the things to do, but it's the people that you're trying to reach and the love that you share with them. And sharing the love of Christ is bountiful in many more ways than you know, the zeros that's put on a check by no stretch of the imagination. So I'll go ahead and close out right here.